Hello, and welcome to the UN Human Rights Podcast, Dignity, Freedom, and Justice for All, commemorating the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I'm Kayloy Henry, one of your hosts for this season of stories. In this episode, we are looking at the dangers and challenges journalists face just trying to do their jobs, and how that affects all of our human rights. Stay tuned. Article 19 of the Universal Declaration states everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. But what happens when this right is systematically restricted? Across the globe, many journalists have that answer. It looks like repression, intimidation, even death, often with no punishment for the perpetrators. According to UNESCO, since 1993, more than 1,600 journalists have been killed for reporting news and bringing information to the public. Of those, only 14% of cases of crimes against journalists have been judicially resolved. The 2nd of November is the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists, and we take a look at the effects increasing conflict situations are having on reporting and what is being done to help protect journalists. Latin America and the Caribbean continues to be the region with the highest number of journalists murdered. In a report by UNESCO on the safety of journalists, most victims were local journalists covering local stories. Pia Flores is a local journalist from Guatemala. She is a founding member of Hola Quorum, an online publication set up in 2021. As she explains, the big challenge of reporting in a place like Guatemala is battling against the effects of its decades-long conflict history. She is interviewed by UN Human Rights' Iban Villalabietia.
Pia, November the 2nd is the International Day to End Impunity for Crimes Against Journalists. Your work focuses on human rights, in particular topics such as gender and the LGBTIQ community, migration, urban violence. Could you tell us what are the main challenges you normally face during your work?
Well, I think the main challenge is the context, the historical context of Guatemala, and also the most recent context where we have a democracy which is rapidly deteriorating. So if we've been used to, for example, having difficulties approaching sources because people are afraid. There's still this culture of fear and violence in Guatemala after even though it's been, more than 30 years since the peace agreements were signed. It's fear from the source, but it affects me in my work in terms of having access to documenting story. At the same time, we expose ourselves as journalists, right? In exposing stories that document how the state simply has left the population completely abandoned when it comes to basic rights, such as access to water, health, education, but also how the state, we have years of the state telling people you need to go report when somebody commits a crime, and people are responding. There's this we normalize that being a journalist is a risk job, which I think is wrong. It shouldn't be like that, but it's become like that because journalists get into these issues where things get complicated, right? So we have the normal, which I don't like to call it that, but what we see and what we always see is that journalists are threatened or harassed or physically attacked and in some occasions assassinated because of their work or because of the investigations they're doing. In Guatemala, it's been more common to see that in outside of the capital, outside of the city areas. And it's very interesting because you could see the farther away you get from the capital where all the resources and all the power is concentrated, the farther away you get geographically.
You've spoken of a climate of fear and impunity in Guatemala, and also a context of a deteriorating democracy. What do you think should be done to prevent attacks and harassment against journalists? Is this something the state should do or international organizations? What can be done to turn around this climate against media freedom?
I think, well, to begin, the state has an obligation to investigate when a crime is reported. So that means that no report, even of that, like from a citizen or any other person or a journalist, should never just be, what's it called, canceled or just completely ignored when a journalist or any other person reports a crime. The first thing the state should do is investigate these types of crimes. But there's a problem here because it's not just anonymous accounts on social media or criminal groups who are harassing or threatening journalists. The state is actually participating in these types of threats. So the first step would also be to stop harassing journalists. But from the state, what we see is this lawfare, right? So we have more than 20 journalists in the last 2 years who's gone into exile, and the mantra, this phrase that people are using, these net centers that are called here in Guatemala, these bots or anonymous accounts, which have, by the way, not been investigated, even though they leak classified information, even though they harass journalists and other activists and human rights defenders. For every time we see a journalist leave, it really, really tragic, especially for democracy, because it means that there's a void, not because a person left, but also because it's intimidating, who's going to fill out that space if you know that if you choose to be a journalist, this is the consequence. So I would say one of the things international organizations could do otherwise, besides condemning what is going on, would be try to strengthen organizations that work locally to defend journalists and other human rights activists, like the FEWA is one group here, but they don't have any resources to a legal case against me, because what we see is that systematically the state is trying to find ways of silencing media who's critical to the state and that investigate corruption in the state. So I would think funding to strengthen local organizations would be a really good move, besides what's been done already, trying to assist the journalists that have to leave Guatemala because their lives are in danger and they're being harassed.
Yeah, tell us about what role can organizations like UN Human Rights play in the protection and safety of journalists, the case of Guatemala and beyond?
I think assistance, having presence here in Guatemala, but also making sure that we have a link to the outside world. So having the presence here of strong international organizations that defend human rights is a way of making sure that it's not completely closed and that something is coming out from here. So I think the presence of international organization here is a way of creating visibility and making sure that even though they silence us.
Let's talk about freedom of expression and human rights. Freedom of expression is recognized in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It's Article 19. By the way, Pia, what do you see the link between journalism and human rights in your particular case and in the context of Guatemala that we are talking?
I think it's double-sided. I think we do that. We can work stories and document stories from people who have somehow not had access to their rights. And at the same time, doing that, we are exercising a right, which is not just a right for the population who needs to have access to information, but also our right to. So I think it's absolutely fundamental. I mean, the only way we can make sure that it's being documented and it's going to be public, that some rights are not being fulfilled by the state and by the state institutions is exercising the right of getting information and publishing it so others can read it and act and report it if that's necessary. I have the right to ask for information because it's a public institution, and it's getting more and more difficult because they don't like the fact that we as journalists are pointing at where are you not doing or complying with your obligation. So that means that if at some point they close the access completely, I would have a lot more difficulty of trying to document to other state institutions or to the population in general that there's a whole group of people, and it's mostly people with limited resources in general.
Do you see yourself as a journalist or as a human rights defender? Is it one thing or the other, or you think it's both?
I think it's both. I think being a journalist and doing my job as a journalist, I'm defending the right that we as a population and as citizens have to being informed. And I'm exercising the right of informing, of doing my job without having to be harassed or put in any situation of risk. The problem is we're doing it right now, like in a complete like void of access to justice. I mean, we can be sure that if I have some incident now and I go to report it, it's not going to be investigated. So I think it's both.
Pia, thank you very much for your time. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pia, for those insights into the challenges facing local journalists. The UN Human Rights Office has worked to tackle impunity in a variety of ways, including advocating for national frameworks for journalist protection, for example, in Guatemala, improving the monitoring and reporting of violations against journalists and media workers through training NGOs and others, and the office has also helped train judicial and other legal professionals on better ways to prosecute and support journalists and media workers who are victims of human rights violations. While the dangers faced by local journalists reporting on their own cities and countries are many, the case for international correspondents is no less dire. While an international journalist may have the might of their international news organization behind them, they can still be subject to attack while providing coverage. We get the perspective of the difficulties international correspondents face from two journalists. First, we hear from Maureen Mercier, a correspondent for Radio Television Suisse, who has been in the Ukraine since the start of the conflict with Russia. Maureen acknowledges that her international status might give her some grace in a conflict zone over a local journalist, but there are still dangers inherent. Her interview is in French. Her voice is dubbed in English by AI.
Donc je pense qu'il faut se rappeler nos obligations, nos devoirs.
I think we have to remember our obligations, our duties before claiming our rights. Once we've said that, it's true that there are a lot of risks hanging over journalists. I'm thinking first of all, of course, of local national journalists, because before correspondence, before what I represent, namely a white European, we have to think of all the journalists around the world who cover the news in their country, who suffer authoritarianism, wars, etc., etc. When you're a journalist in your own country, we're doubly vulnerable because authoritarianism is coming down on us, on our families. Again, that's not my case. For example, when I go to Libya, it's not my case when I travel to complicated territories. What really concerns me about the risks in Gaza, and I think our profession forgets to mention it, is that we foreign journalists don't have access to Gaza, and that's a huge problem. What's happening in Gaza is happening in a lot of places, and when in a lot of countries that are going through conflicts that have gigantic consequences, how do you talk about a situation when you're not on the spot? By definition, I feel it's simply impossible, and yet that's what's happening. I honestly don't feel like talking about protecting journalists, because first you have to talk about protecting people. Whom is interviewing? What if people just can't live, can't testify, can't have opinions, can't express them? So these rights absolutely have to be guaranteed. But what I'd like to say here is that we need to move from the written word to action. I think that these declarations, the United Nations, in general, suffer from the same problem as the media. They need to regain credibility. They need to assert, and not just assert.
L'affirmer, mais je pense que son rôle, c'est un petit peu comme nous autres journalistes, c'est retrouver une crédibilité.
Next, we hear from Gunilla von Hall, who is a foreign correspondent for Sweden's Svenska Dagblad newspaper. Currently part of the United Nations in Geneva's press corps, Gunilla has worked in more than 40 countries, including Syria, North Korea, Iraq, Rwanda, and Bosnia-Herzegovina. She said there are different risks international correspondents face, and those risks have increased over the years.
I think there are many different risks, and maybe the first one I have to mention is the security threat. It's becoming more and more dangerous to travel in war zones and conflicts and crises as a journalist. We're also targets in many places. We have to go to the front lines. There can be attacks, there can be mines, there's a risk for kidnapping, injuries, illnesses when there is not any healthcare around. I read that the killings of journalists, I think, went up with 50% last year, and especially against women. So it is really, really dangerous. It's life-threatening to be a journalist in the field in conflicts today. We're not, maybe not lethal, but where we can be attacked when we cover, for example, a demonstration or protests. There they could be, we're injured, we are victims of the tear gas or rubber bullets and things like that. That's also a danger. And the last thing maybe I want to mention is the impunity that I think is more than 90% of all cases of journalists being killed are not being, are remaining unsolved. No prosecutions, no punishments. I'm worried about this development, the trend that journalists are being targeted. That is really what that could lead to, is that we're going to stay away. We're going to be further and further from the fighting, from the front lines, from the heart of the crisis, because we don't want to get killed. That means we're not going to report, we're not going to get the whole pictures. The readers and the watchers will not get the whole pictures. And I think also the big problem here is the impunity. If journalists feel like they're going out there and they'll get injured and then there is no accountability, I'm worried that they will just stay away from places where we should be. We need to be to report, to tell the world what is going on. What is perhaps promising is that when it comes to censorship, the independent news media that has to leave countries, they might be strengthened by this. They'll become more vocal, more stronger, more widely spread. There'll be more attention on them and on the issues. What I can see too is that with the debate and discussion now about security and the threat for journalists, that has increased the awareness at all the news desks. Nowadays, we have big security teams, we have trackings, we have all the equipment, bulletproof vests and helmets and people who control the road. Things like that did not exist when I was in Bosnia or I was in covering the genocide in Rwanda or former Zaire, Democratic Republic of Congo. We didn't have that at all. That exists today. That's very good. The worry there is that as news media has to do, cut down their resources, that could also be threatened, and we will not longer have this kind of backup of security. And who will be suffering then is the people who needs to have the information, because they will not get it. It is worrying because we will not get the information, and it's the whole freedom of expression that's threatened. So I think we just have to keep up what we're doing now, discuss, debate, demand accountability, increase security for journalists when they do their work, the way they can go out in the field.
I want to thank Pia Flores, Maureen Mercier, and Gunilla Van Hall for sharing their insights and experiences with us. Let's hope more is done to protect journalists, local and international, and bring to justice those who have been harmed. Well, we've come to the end of this episode of Dignity, Freedom, and Justice for All, commemorating 75 years of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. If you want to join in the commemoration or are interested in learning more about the Declaration and the 75th Anniversary Campaign, then please go to our website, www.ohchr.org/get-involved. I'm Kayloy Henry. Thanks for listening.